Hello and welcome to FOFOP, my irregular podcast, my little side project. I guess the podcasts are the side project, the hobby, and TOFOP tends to come out reasonably regularly. We're on a little break at the moment until mid-January, but there's some best of and some lost episodes up at the moment. And then this podcast, FOFOP, has kind of fallen down the back of the couch a little bit. But whenever I have one of my friends in town, one of the regulars on FOFOP, or I have an opportunity, I like to be able to record an episode. And Matt Kirshen, who's been a regular on this podcast, who I think is, you know, just one of the nicest blokes going around in world comedy and super, super funny, was in Sydney. And he was going to pop down and see my improvised stand-up show that I was doing that night. And we had an opportunity to catch up for a couple of hours. And we thought, well, we could go to lunch or we could, you know, just catch up and record it. So this is us just catching up, and we recorded it, and that's what an episode of FOFOP basically is these days. But anyway, I've got some live shows coming up. If you are in Australia, I am going to be doing some live shows in Hobart. That's the first night of my new Will Informed tour. And then I'm doing the Melbourne International Comedy Festival for a month at the Comedy Theatre, which has been my home during the festival for 11 or 12 years now, so a really long time. I've nearly done a year of shows there. That's pretty crazy. So 20 shows at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, but only one in Hobart, and that is almost sold out already. So if you're in Hobart and you want to come and see the show, it'll be the first time I ever do it, then come along to that. All the details, comedy.com.au, and yeah, buy tickets for Melbourne. I should mention I'm not going to Adelaide or Brisbane, which is weird for me. I think there's only the second Adelaide I've missed in the last 20 years, and I must have been going to Brisbane for the Brisbane Comedy Festival almost every year for the last, I don't know, 12, 13, well, anyway, I don't even know how long the festival's been going, but it's been a long time. So it's weird for me not to be going to Adelaide and Brisbane at the start of the year. It means that my whole year of putting together a new show is in a bit of a different order. You know, I won't have done a series of shows before Melbourne. So, you know, it's been a long time since I've sort of brought a really brand new show to Melbourne, which is going to be exciting and terrifying all in its own way. But coming off the back of what I thought was my best show last year, Illegal, I'm both terrified and excited to, you know, work on some new stuff that, you know, is not about me getting arrested. It was a very personal show to be doing for the last year, and it did take a toll on me. You know, it was the most fun I've ever had doing a show. I love doing that show so much, but there was also, you know, I recognize now, having not done it for a while, that there was a bit of a personal emotional toll in that I was reliving one of the worst days of my life over and over on stage every night. And, you know, there's a therapeutic aspect to that, and there's an aspect of it where, you know, for the show to work, you have to be in that moment. And particularly the way the show's structured, for those who've seen it, you understand it. For those who haven't, the entire show takes place, you know, from when I left home in Sydney on the Saturday until when I got home in Sydney on the Sunday. So for most of the time, I'm sort of, you know, letting the show unfold as it unfolded on the day, you know, trying not to use the benefit of hindsight, but trying to describe an event. So it means that, you know, to do that properly, you have to kind of go back to that event every night to be in that moment. So that, you know, I noticed by the end of the year had taken like a toll on me, you know, from a performance point of view, even though it was the show that I loved doing the most. So I've been thinking a lot about, you know, what to write about for this new show. And I haven't necessarily settled on anything yet at all, to be honest. I got a whole bunch of ideas, and I know definitely, you know, what I don't want to do. Which, you know, is important in itself, but it hasn't necessarily led me exactly to what it is that I do want to do yet. But I am still enthused and excited about the process that I am on, putting it together. And I am looking forward to seeing what it is. So come out and see it. I promise it'll be good by the time you see it. Well, I don't know. It might not be good for the first few nights, but it'll get good. Hopefully it'll be good when you see it. Anyway, that's not a very good ad, is it? Anyway, for the people who skipped the ads, I'm glad you did. There's no point saying this because this is still in the bit that they would have skipped. All right, I am rambling. Sorry about this. I bet you've really missed these long introductions. So there you go. Couple of shows on sale already. Look out for some other things that I will be doing that I will publicize when I can publicize them. Great. Good ad, Will. Enjoy this episode with Matt Kirshen.
The following episode of FOFOP is classified MA. It contains some coarse language, some nudity, drug references, a sex scene, time travel, terrible Batman impersonations, a Charlie Clausen pronounced Clausen-shaped hole, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that the program is not suitable for persons under the age of 15, and minors must be accompanied by an adult guardian or priest. This is John Deek speaking.
Hello and welcome to FOFOP. I'm Will Anderson, and rejoining me, I don't really do FOFOP anymore. My guests might not know this. It's a very intermittent podcast, FOFOP. But we've done, 280 episodes or something, so it continues. It continues slowly. We put out little sort of mini episode specials, updates, and they mostly are now just with people who have previously been on the podcast who are in town. So Matt Kirshen's here. Hello, Matt Kirshen.
Hey, I'm glad I snuck in. I'm glad I got in through the door when the door was open back in the day.
Yeah. Well, that's true. And also, my front door was open.
Your front door was literally open. You were lying on your couch. I wasn't sure if you were asleep or dead or anything.
Well, I have a show tonight, and I've already recorded something this morning. And at some stage during the day, I need to get some sort of rest. Lay down, have some sort of rest. And originally, we were going to record a bit earlier, and then I was going to have my rest before the show. Mm-hmm. But then,
Jetstar had other ideas. Things,
well, I want to get to your journey to here today, but. I decided to lay down on the couch. I watched Australia play some cricket, which was very rewarding, and then they went to lunch. And then I watched an episode of The West Wing, because in the last week and a half, I have been rewatching The West Wing, and I'm currently about halfway through season 4. So that's how much I've gone through in the last week and a half of rewatching The West Wing.
I was in the airport today, and I didn't realize that your airport... fairly light on the security thing compared to American airports. It's quite relaxed. It's quite chill. I enjoy going through security in Australia. You don't even show your passport. It's very relaxing. But you do expressly ban cricket bats.
Is that right?
I saw a poster. I took a photo.
We can't take cricket bats not on the plane, right? You can take a cricket bat under the plane. It's not like the Australian cricket scandal cut us so deep that they've banned people from even transporting cricket bats from state to state.
No, they have to truck them. They have to send the bats on ahead.
The airlines have ruled a line in the sand. you can't just take the cricket bat on the plane. Is that would be what you're saying, correct?
Yeah, a cricket bat is a designated weapon in an Australian aviation environment.
Well, I think that is fair enough. In fact, I think that's much more dangerous than, say, nail clippers or whatever. I know it's a hack comedy premise to talk about the idea of the damage you can do with nail clippers on a plane, but if we are just using that as an example of something that is banned, I think a cricket bat should also
be banned.
That's
a fair point. If I were home and suddenly thought there might be some kind of housebreaking scenario and I had both a cricket bat and nail clippers to hand, I probably would go for the bat first.
I mean, it feels like one of those things from a comedy movie where two people are reaching back to get their weapons and one comes with a cricket bat and the other one has a pair of nail clippers. Like, it feels like a deleted scene from Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Although, I would say this. If you were a burglar and then suddenly you got to the bottom of the stairs and then suddenly a light came on at the top of the stairs, but a small, almost spotlight, lighting someone from behind... and they were just standing at the top of the stairs, slowly clipping their nails one by one, while saying, "Hello."
I mean, sure. I'm not denying in any way, young Matthew, that nail clippers can be used intimidatingly by somebody who is already intimidating.
I mean, it's an exceptionally weird thing to do. If I were a burglar and I saw that scene, I would stop burgling at that moment and leave that building.
And just, well, I'd imagine the minute the burglar kind of discovers the person on the stairs, the person on the stairs is looking them directly in the eye and then just slowly, without even looking at their toenail, clips another nail and it just flies off through the air.
Oh, you're even seeing it as a toenail. I was thinking fingernails, but toenails might... I don't know. Because to clip a toenail, you have to be off balance to an extent, whereas to clip a fingernail...
Well, see, but this is what I'm thinking, is like that it's actually a show of dexterity. Like the fact that this person is so easily able to clip their toenails in such a disdainful manner without like even looking at the nail, keeping direct eye contact with you while clipping the nail at the same time.
He has a simian level of balance.
Yeah, that says to me that he's been trained since birth by some cult that Liam Neeson is in charge of in the mountains. That's what I'm seeing. Yeah, no, you're right. Like, I think that, you know, I would trust John Wick to fuck up somebody with some nail clippers. I imagine.
Still never seen John Wick.
Really?
Yeah. I've got to rectify that.
I don't want to spoil it for you.
I've heard it's good and fun.
It's really good. There's two of them.
Yep.
All I will say, though, is that, like, I mean, do you know the conceit of the movie? It's the kind of the...
I know nothing about it, apart from that it's an action film with lots of fun action.
Okay, so this is, like, a massive spoiler for the movie. However, like, it's also something that happens in, like, the first 2 minutes of the movie. And by this stage, if you haven't seen John Wick, like, people have talked about this enough, right? It's become the kind of joke go-to reference when you reference John Wick. But essentially, there's two movies, and the entire premise is... They fucked up his car, they killed his dog, now he's going to murder everyone for 3 hours. Like, okay. That is essentially the whole premise of two films.
I wouldn't even count that as a spoiler.
And I would suggest it's a disproportionate response. I feel like somewhere halfway through the second movie, you're like, I mean, I know he really liked his car and his dog, but now his body count is 300, and I feel like he's done too much.
What kind of car was it?
It's a very good question. I like that you've clarified. There is a certain type of car. It was a car with great sentimental value. It might have been a Mustang. I'm not sure. But it was like an old school kind of, like, you know, muscle car is what I remember. It was a nice car anyway. There'll be John Wick. By the way, it's raining quite heavily here now.
It really is. I don't know if it's being picked up in the mics, but there's if you can hear a sort of static noise, that's actually rain. This should be quite relaxing for a podcast.
I hope so. It's actually quite relaxing to do because, like, the nature of my house is that, like, it's kind of in an area where it rains and you open the doors in summer. It kind of has a nice, it's kind of a nice sort of tropical vibe to it or something.
You live in a white noise machine.
Yeah, essentially, right? And because also the wiring in here is really bad, we're kind of sitting in the dark.
Yeah.
Like, there's light all around us in various, like, lamps and stuff, but the two of us are sitting... on a table that is slightly too far away from each other.
We are a little bit... if it were a long table, rather... Again, this is sort of the comical, like... Bruce Wayne having dinner with his date.
It is
on either end of a comically long table.
What I like about that is you are the second person to have made that exact same reference about this table. So we clarify that that is indeed what the table reminds people of.
We could really do it. Are you near any whales? Because that would really complete the white noise effect here.
You know
the
what?
Nice,
actually,
relaxing sound.
Absolutely. Yeah. So around where you could would have pulled up on in the ferry. Basically, if you went around there, that's where you're sort of whale watching and where your whales will come by. So actually, absolutely, that is
that'll
the case.
That'll do. Yeah, I should point out I took a boat to the podcast. This is now, my first.
This is what I wanted to get to this. So let's go back from. Well, no, let's start at the airport. Where did you fly in from today?
So I was in Melbourne.
Okay.
I did some shows in Melbourne where some probably science fans showed up who were almost certainly probably science fans courtesy of FOFOP fans.
Okay, well, that's good though.
Oh, I also had a drink with a group of people who weren't at... I did a bar show in Melbourne and was drinking with some people who went, oh, we missed the show, but what was it like? And we were chatting. And then it came out that I was one of the comics, and then they said, what's your name? And I said that, and then what's your full name? This was after a while of chatting, and then this woman went, oh, I've heard you on Will Anderson's podcast loads of times.
Oh, there you go. All right. Well, good. They didn't make it to the show,
But it's, you know, it's nice to be... It's nice to be orally recognized after the fact.
Yes, it is always nice to be orally recognized, Matthew.
So I was...
Is that what we call it these days?
Hourly.
Orally, sorry. Orally, yes, you're right, right. Sorry.
Yes, Mike. Yes. That's what the certificate said.
So you flew from Melbourne. You flew on our finest of all airlines, Jetstar. The most reliable.
Yeah, it was a toss-up between
airlines.
Jetstar and Tiger, and I think...
It's a hard choice these days. I shouldn't really say that, because like Qantas I really like, and Jetstar is their kind of spin-off, but I've had a couple of... recently, we had some friends. We were going to a 40th up in Byron Bay, and that day Jetstar was a real nightmare, and everyone's got flights got cancelled. But you can tell when people haven't been out for a while, because we have these two friends who've got two kids, you know, live out of town now, don't really have that opportunity to have a good weekend. And they couldn't get on this flight to Byron Bay. And they were like, we are not going to miss this weekend. So hired a car and drove the 10 hours to get there, because they were like, we've already got the babysitters. We've already planned a big weekend away from our children.
Good work,
we are not
guys.
Missing this. You are not keeping us from this, Jetstar.
So I came into the airport, and then Google Maps gave me a variety of options to get to yours.
Okay.
Of roughly the
same...
So
your flight was late. We should mention that.
My flight was an hour and a half delayed.
Yes.
It was...
not bad for Jetstar.
Yeah,
would have been a lot of people trying to sneak cricket bats on. That's their main delay.
Yeah, and there just weren't enough bowlers to handle them. So, yeah, got in an hour and a half late, and then I was like, I was going to meet a friend for lunch, but then she actually ended up having family things she needed to deal with.
Uh-huh.
So that meant that we were back roughly on the same time scale.
Yes.
Give or take. And then I had the choice between doing a train, then a bus, or a train, then a boat, then a walk.
And you took, I think, the right choice. Even though I think technically probably train, then bus would have been a bit more direct, got you a little bit closer and probably a little bit less fuss. But when you have the option of taking a boat, and it's a comparable option, you've got to take the boat.
It's when it's about the same amount of time, marginally more expensive, but not... enough to make a difference, and you get to go on a ferry that goes through Sydney Harbour.
Right, on Sydney Harbour?
Yeah.
I mean, admittedly, it started thunderstorming and raining as you were on that boat.
Well, annoyingly, the boat crossing when I was undercover and indoors was windy and breezy, but very pleasant. It was literally as we pulled into the dock that it started to turn on. So then I got a taxi because I didn't want to walk in the rain for 10 minutes.
No, fair enough. But it is quite lovely to podcast too. So you're in Australia partly because you're doing some shows with Jim Jefferies?
Yeah, well, the main reason I'm coming out is that my sister, who lives in Sydney, just had a baby. And that's the first kid in the family.
Is that right?
So I've got a little niece now who lives in Sydney.
Oh, nice.
So... I was like, well, I want to meet my niece and want to hang out with the sister. And then it happened that Jim, and I write on Jim's show. I think I mentioned this in the past on this podcast. So I write on his TV show, and I was just telling Jim, hey, I might come out to Australia, and I saw you're going to be out there. And he was like, oh, well, if you're going to be out there, you can jump on a couple of the shows. And I'm like, well, yeah, why not come out and get to do some time in an arena?
Yeah, absolutely. Unless Cher or somebody, like, you know, taps you for opening her shows or something, it's rare that you get to play an arena.
Oh, speaking of which, I saw Andrew McClelland in Melbourne.
Yeah, supporting Cher.
Yes. He just finished that. God, we have some weird lives.
Sometimes.
Andrew McClelland, a friend of ours, a comedian based in Melbourne, who I first met from numerous Edinburgh Festival trips, is also a DJ.
Yep. And recently DJed opening for Cher.
Yeah.
Yes, the Cher. I know what you're thinking. They've misspoken, but I'll repeat it again. Cher. Yeah, the famous Cher, you know, from the boat on the cannon. That Cher.
The Sunny famous Cher thought the ideal opener for her tour was to have a pleasant, jovial, semi-posh,
I mean, the funny
nerdy
thing is
comedian
too,
who DJs.
But I mean, you know, who would have ever thought at some stage that, you know, little bloody Jim Jefferies, little bloody Jimmy Jefferies, from Australia would be touring arenas around the world like he was fucking Bon Jovi.
No, exactly. I mean, when we were doing Jongleurs leads together.
Yeah.
And the gig was mostly like, all right, handle the drunks and then get drunk ourselves in the bar afterwards with the free drinks tickets. I didn't think at some point I'm going to be writing on his TV show and then hanging out at his arena show in
right
in Sydney.
So what's it like to... So Jim's show, I think, has been excellent, and people seem to have really responded to it really well.
It's fun to work on.
What is it that you kind of, like... I mean, without giving anything away that you're not, you know, obviously allowed to give away, but I'm really just asking a question more about, like, what are you trying to achieve? Is there kind of a sense of, like, you know, this is what the show's about? Like, and I don't mean what I see, because I reckon I could probably take a few guesses at it.
Like, but, as in, like, what's the message of this? I don't
well, not even the message, but like almost mission like statements. The mission statement, yeah.
I don't think we have a mission statement in the same way that maybe some of the other shows do. Because, you know, we're in the same genre of shows as, like, The Daily Show and Samantha Bee and John Oliver and that kind of thing. But I think that the two things we aim for to distinguish ourselves from the rest of those shows is, firstly, we're more international, and Jim goes off and does all these field pieces around the world, and Jim has this international perspective as an Australian who used to live in the UK, who now lives in America, and does stand up all around, like on every continent. So we have that. But I think, honestly, the other mission statement that we have on the show is just be funny. And that seems trite and that seems, like, simple. But I think some of those shows are phenomenal shows and brilliantly written and brilliantly done. But don't... They will go for the important over the joke, and yeah. Jim is absolutely a comic first, so we always go funny over, like, funny is the most important thing.
It's pretty exciting to be, because I mean, I've seen you go from, you know, your move to America,
yeah,
to like really, like, I mean, you know, having a great established, you know, sort of job now on a show that's like a really great, you know, show, yeah, and doing some really excellent work. Like, you know, it's rare that you actually end up working on something that you're like, this much, this is exciting to work on. That, yeah, we have the possibility to like make comedy about things that are really good and interesting.
Thanks. And it is fun. And like, as much, also, I should say, as much as we do go for the joke above everything, it is nice to also be able to go, you know what, this is a thing that I think we should talk about. Or this is a, like we did a piece with Tara Flynn, who's an Irish comic and a friend of Jim's, and yeah, you would have known her from the UK and everything, but she got really involved in the fight to repeal the abortion ban in Ireland.
Yep.
And we did this field piece, like, that was probably my favorite thing we did on the show, where firstly Jim interviewed Tara and asked about her situation, and she sort of famously come out at a rally and told the crowd the story of how she had to travel out of Ireland to get an abortion, and which is what people have to do and had to do. So we did that. And then the second half of the piece was, and this was Lindsay Crystal, who used to run the field team. This was her idea, and it's wonderful. So we had this anti-abortion Irish politician guy and religious zealot, and Jim interviewed him. But even though he was in Ireland the day before on the tour show, we waited until Jim was going to be in London and then made that guy fly to London. And then Forrest, who is one of the writers on the show and also opens for Jim on the tour, like, posed as one of the production assistants and just fucked with him for the entire journey. So we just gave him a miserable, shitty journey for this entire time, just to get to this interview. Little Easter egg if you watch the piece, because... we never made this explicit, but Forrest dressed as and modeled himself after John Candy's character in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Like, he shaved his he gave himself a mustache, like, and just like. but we got to do something like that, it was a really funny piece, but also that was. We were the only show, I think, talking about that, because I think many people wouldn't be aware of that as an issue, but we have, you know, friends who are Irish comedians who are talking about this and screaming it, and we got to do that. We got to do a piece on... I think we were the only show that did a piece about the shittiness of the... There's two laws. They're basically the same law, but one's Congress and one's the Senate. The congressman and one's the Senate, but it's Foster and Sester, which are these anti... supposedly anti-trafficking,
yeah,
sex trafficking laws, but actually are laws that just make life more dangerous for sex workers by shutting down websites that they use to keep themselves safe.
Yeah.
And that was one that, you know, there was a PSA in favor of it that had loads of celebrities, including like Seth Meyers and Amy Schumer and, you know, various people. Because you see it on paper, you go, oh, are you against,
yeah,
sex trafficking? And you go, well,
if you lead with that,
well, that's,
are you against sex trafficking? People are like, yeah, actually, I am.
Yeah.
Oh, are you against sex work in general? Because this is also going to destroy that.
Yeah, and not only that, it's going to not have an effect on levels of sex work or even really sex trafficking, but it will make the people who are doing this work more vulnerable and less able to protect themselves.
Mm.
So we did a piece, we got to do like a desk piece on that that was... I was really pleased we got to write about it because that no one else was talking about that. And if anyone's going to talk about it, Jim's a good person too.
Well, I think that's absolutely right.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that, I think that's what's most fascinating about the show is that, you know, at least from what I've seen of the show, is that, you know, and I'm sure this is not the case, and I'm sure John Oliver would never claim it is the case. And I know it's not the case, you know, with someone like John Stewart. Like, if you look at his early work, it's nowhere near as sort of evolved, you know, politically or, you know, what he thinks about the world as it later became. John Oliver feels a bit more like he just, like, landed fully formed, being smart and knowing about everything.
Yeah,
and, like,
that show,
you know,
hit the ground. I mean, it still took... I think it took, like, 3 or 4 weeks to find it, to really find its legs. But, I mean, they pretty much...
Yeah. But even as a person, I mean, like,
yeah,
you kind of go, yeah, I believe John Oliver saying all this stuff because,
yes,
this sounds like stuff that...
And he also had like 5 years cutting his teeth on The Daily Show.
Right. Getting people ready that was going to be him.
Yeah.
But that's why I think it makes... And, you know, if Samantha Bee goes off and does something and it's brilliant and satirical, you're like, yes, this is brilliant and satirical. But at the same time, I kind of... Like, I expected it would be because you're
right,
all brilliant and satirical. Like, you know... Whereas for Jim to be doing some of those things, like, there's a bit of a journey for him, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not all his, you know, gun routine. Like, he's come from a different place to where he's going to now.
Well, that one route, it's really... We've both known him before and after that.
Right.
And his stand-up, particularly his specials, if you watch, like, his first two specials, whatever, there were always the dick jokes and there was always the social and political commentary and stuff in there, but it was,
yeah,
always... But his crowd was very male heavy and it was very much like the sex and drugs and rock and roll stuff. And then that gun control routine went viral and continues to go viral. I mean, ridiculously every time there's a shooting in America, which is quite often.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not one of those things that you, like, obviously know, like, obviously Jim isn't interested in there being more shootings.
No.
However... You just, on an objective scale, have to recognize that every time there is one, he gets a little career bump.
Yeah.
Like, do you know? Like,
he had a thing where he...
Technically, it is not in his best interest for those shootings, that routine to work, and for people to stop having guns.
There was one this year on his birthday. There was a shooting, and he hadn't seen the news because we were also taping that day. And so he just saw, like, at mentions in his Twitter or in Instagram and that kind of thing that just... like birthday messages. So he just tweeted out something like, thanks for the kind words, everyone. Having a great day or whatever like that. Not realizing that also everyone was tweeting at him because of the gun control routine, because there'd been another mass murder in America.
Were you around, can I ask you this?
Go for it.
When the rumor of his, that he was dead happened?
Yes, I was.
Can I tell you, I'll tell you my experience of it first and then we can get yours, because I was at for this radio show I've been doing, we were having like a work function where all the shows across the two of the networks make a presentation to like clients and staff and all
right,
these sort of things, right? So as we're on stage, the word has come through that Jim has been killed, I think he was in a car accident,
in a car crash in Malta.
Yeah, okay, there you go. And... So someone's come out to tell me, knowing that I knew him, and then, like, I've quickly looked up, and the first couple of things that, like, came up, I was like, and people are like, you know, this has really happened, and people are, like, almost consoling me, and I've gone to find Husey to say, hey, this is what I just fucking heard. And I'm like, but, you know, like,
yeah.
And then I Google a little bit more. Like, I think of doing something that no one so far in this story had thought of doing, which was going to Jim's Twitter to see if Jim was saying anything about it.
Or even to see if Jim had tweeted anything,
yeah,
after dying.
Yeah, and as it turns out he wasn't dead. It was a pretty quick moment. But
well, if you look at the website that reported it, it was like, it was called something like MaltaTodays.com.
Right.
Like Malta Today, but with an S. Like it was, and you look at it very quick, and it was not even a very good... It's one of those clickbait website. It's like that sort of like CNNnews.com or whatever that looks so tenuously like the real thing but isn't really, and is covered in like one secret trick that your dentist doesn't want you to know. So, Jim did say that he...
I do not trust my dentist, though. Yeah. I do think he's hiding at least one thing from me.
What if it's not a dental trick, though?
Oh, I doubt it is a dental trick. It'd be great if you clicked on that link and it wasn't a dental trick.
It's
either.
Just like someone dressed as a... It's literally your dentist in a video. And it's just like, and that's how you make them come. I'm not sure I wanted you to know that either.
There was a reason my dentist was keeping this to himself.
Yeah, if that is the way to me, I'd rather they didn't. That's... I mean, I'm vegetarian for a reason.
But what was that like? Do you remember being around when it...
I'm trying to remember what time of day the story broke. I think it might have happened either in the evening or in the... I think it might have happened outside of office hours, but I remember seeing Jim either later that day when he came into the office or the next morning. And he was... Because then we did a thing about it on the show. Yeah. But he definitely... There was a bit of him that regretted having debunked it so quickly.
Right. Yeah.
There was a bit of him that was like, fuck, I wish I could have found out how people... talked about me after I died.
Yeah, your immediate instinct is to debunk it and reassure everyone. But once you realize, I could have seen how this played out.
Yeah, it's like,
I could have kept my head down for a couple
one.
Of days and just, yeah.
Like, not even, I mean, not, even just an hour. Just let it play for an hour. Before
right. Oh, yeah. In retrospect, that'd just be kind of fun, wouldn't it? And just be on the, like, just, I'm going down to the basement, taking my computer for no particular reason. Please turn off all the phones.
It was pretty easy to check that he was not in Malta as well. That was the other thing.
So writing for a show where you talk about a lot of, you know, news and stuff, you've always been someone who's been quite, you know, aware. But yeah. Have you had to learn a lot, you know, to, like, you know, kind of... in a sort of sense of, like, you know, about the system or about, like topics and issues?
I mean, to an extent, maybe, but really less than you'd think. Also, not least, because, again, if we were doing The Daily Show, then maybe, yeah. Cause
yeah,
it really,
it's a different show.
Because you really are reacting to that day's news. But we're a weekly show. We decide on our topics on Wednesdays because we record on Tuesdays. Mm. So, like, record on Tuesdays and then topics, discussion Wednesday, and then we start writing... And, you know, sometimes a big story that we can't avoid breaks on the weekend and we'll do a whole rewrite on Monday. But really, we're not being super topical. We're going bigger picture. And even increasingly, because we're about to go into season 3, increasingly we're going even more, like, general, like, social topics and even some that really aren't newsy at all. Like, we did one on service animals, and we did one on and the abuse of that system. We just did one on paper. Like, I mean, that's a really general topic. Like,
that's the one in the meeting where everybody's like, anyone got any ideas?
That literally was. But, like, Lucas, one of the writers, went, I want to do this thing about how paper's shit. And Jim instantly was like, I like it. So you're like, all right, that was a surprisingly easy sell for a wit. So we did that. So, you know, so we are doing these more general topics, and they are, but yeah, you do end up finding, when you do the research, or also we have researchers who help with that. There's a couple of people who do the research, and we research stuff as well, and they find us clips and stories that help write it. But, so you do learn stuff in there, and you find out stuff that you didn't know, but also at the same time, we're not the newsiest of the shows. And also, we get to... Because it's Jim, the fun thing about writing for Jim is you get to write dumb jokes and smart jokes.
Right.
Because Jim's really good at doing that. Like, Jim's good at being, like, the smartest dumb guy in the room or the dumbest smart guy or whatever you want to do. Like, he'll do something really clever and immediately undercut it with something really stupid. And we can fit both of those in, which is nice. It's nice to be able to... Like, I think if you're writing for John Oliver, John Oliver always knows the story.
Right.
He always knows what's going on. Whereas Jim, you can write pieces where he's sort of discovering it with the audience.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And you can write a really stupid joke where he can... where he can just not know... This is a Jim pitch during Punch Up, but this is so, it's such a stupid joke. We were talking about Les Moonves, the CBS television
former executive,
boss.
Is he former yet? He lost
very
his
much
job,
former,
didn't he?
Yeah. Very much all, former
so
on account
a lot of,
sex,
a lot of Harvey Weinstein style stuff, right?
Exactly. But yeah, we did a piece about that, and then just Jim throws in the middle like, Les Moonves. That's French for the movies. It's the stupidest joke. But right. And yeah. that was Jim's pitch as well. But it's like, that's not a joke that any others would do because it's too dumb for their character.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
But that's a perfect Jim joke because it's dumb, but you have to have been really smart to get to that level of stupid.
Tell me this, because we haven't seen each other in... What's well, been like ages,
we haven't
really?
Seen each other. Yeah, because I haven't been here for a while, and you haven't been in LA for a while.
No, so tell me what you've been up to. Like, what? How's life otherwise? Like outside, you know, work it, stuff. Are you still doing? Like, do you get time to do stand up and stuff still?
Yeah, less. That's the bit I miss because I've been writing so much recently that I haven't been able to go. Like, I can't really do when we're in the middle of seasons. I can't go on the road. I can't do clubs because American comedy clubs, as you know, want you from like Thursday to Sunday.
Yeah,
and
doesn't really work with your schedule.
That doesn't work if you're meant to. You know, you can take the odd day. They're very generous about that. You go like, hey, can I get out like mid-afternoon on Friday and go to this club? But, or like write. You know, sometimes if Jim's on the road, we get to write from home because we don't need to be in the room when Jim's not there. But so you're like, oh, I could write from home, or I could write on a plane to a gig or whatever. But most of the time you can't do that. So I miss that. So it's been fun doing that in Australia.
Yeah.
Like I did two nights at the Comics Lounge in Melbourne and I got to, you know, do 40-minute sets in front of a club.
Right. Now, how was the Comics Lounge? Did you have a good time?
That was fun.
It was good?
It's a, you know, it's a club. It
reminds me... Like it's as clubby as we get in Australia.
Yeah, it reminded me so much of gigs I used to do back home.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it's got the long tables and people are out there for, a night out.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was fun. There were loads of people in. It was a nice audience. It's a good room. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, they run, like, I mean, I think it's very important that the industry has a whole bunch of different, like,
yeah, because a
ways
lot
of
Melbourne is that
things.
Sort of, the festival is so dominant, and then there's a lot of these alt rooms and a lot of these bar shows and mini theatre shows, and they're lovely, and I got to do a couple of those, and they were great. I think you're right. It is nice that Melbourne also has that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also has the kind of, like, weekend...
And it's an introduction to, like, comedy or a place to go and watch comedy that people don't want to go and sit above a restaurant or, like, yeah. You know, like, people don't want to have to, like, sit on a milk crate or something to
exactly.
enjoy their
it
comedy.
It felt like a night out for, yeah. like, you know, family people and yeah. grown-ups and, like, you know, it was an older crowd than a lot of Melbourne audiences.
Yeah, absolutely. That's and what it is. And, I mean, that's why, I mean, Sydney's so lucky with the Sydney Comedy Store because it's right. just such a great, you know, heartland club. To base, you know, your scene around.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. But it was fun getting to do that. So yeah, I've been doing that. I don't think I was living with Holly last time I spoke to you, but
no, but you are
living with a girlfriend.
Now. Okay, nice.
Like a grown up and everything.
How long has that been happening for?
Well, we officially moved in together about 5 months ago.
Okay.
Maybe longer. What was it? 6 months? I'm not sure.
Was the unofficial period beforehand?
Basically, I was living in her apartment.
Okay.
While
and now
still
have you now moved into her, or have you gone for a So have you moved into her apartment?
I moved into her apartment.
Okay. Now, how is that? Because, like, there is a school of thought that says, you know what? Let's just find someone fresh together and, like, start again as, like, two. Because if you move into someone's space, it is forever their space that you've moved into rather than a shared communal space.
There is a bit of that, but to be honest, I hate setting up spaces.
Okay. You're happy to live in someone else's.
She's got good, she has good taste. I've moved in enough of my stuff. You know, I got moved in some of my furniture. Some of my stuff's in storage for a time that we maybe will move into a bigger place that can fit more of our collective stuff. But we both got rid of some things. And yeah, it's, you know, I was ready to move out of my place anyway. The only thing is that LA, since we both moved in to my old place and our current place, the LA property market spiked.
Right.
So we were just looking at it, it was just really dispiriting. We were looking at it going, we should move into a bigger one-bedroom place or even a two-bedroom place where we can have like an office / escape from each other.
Another room. Another room. Space.
Exactly. Yeah. And then we looked at it and went, if we move into a place right now, we would be paying more for this collective place than we are currently paying for two individual rentals in two different apartments.
Yeah.
And that's just irritating.
Well, yeah. I mean, in that case, you just keep your old place as your spare room.
That's, yeah.
we do have an office. It's my old place.
Which is kind of what I was doing for a long time.
Yeah.
But then it's just silly. You're like, no. What am I doing? I'd slept in my own bed maybe once every 2 weeks. And then the rest of the time, it was just a place I would sometimes go to.
I recently got rid of my place in LA, which was sad because I, had had that place for a long time, and I had been the only person who'd ever lived in that apartment at that point.
I didn't know that. I left your place.
So just recently, just like literally a couple of months ago, because I just wasn't going back enough to justify, keeping
sense.
Paying
it for
it.
It didn't look like it was the cheapest of places.
No, and the dollar. So when a couple of things worked against me when I first got that place.
Yep.
It was a lot less because it was like it was starting and it was opening and they were trying to get people into it, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I did not know that you were the first person in that room.
Yeah, so that was part of it. They had to fill an entire apartment block, so it was a bit easier.
Yeah.
The market wasn't as hot back then, like as it later became, and the Australian dollar was almost $1.10 to the American dollar, whereas now the Australian dollar is 70 cents to the American dollar. So if I'm earning the majority of the money I'm using to pay for that apartment in Australia, okay, that apartment suddenly doubled almost in fucking what it was costing me. So I was just
that's a lot.
I can't. For a place I'm not at. So, but then, I have to go back and do, but I've got some work to go back to do early in the year and whatever. And I'm going back for 3 weeks. And someone was like, well, where are you going to live? And I said, I'm going to go back to a style of living that I did once before I had an apartment and I enjoyed very much, which is I'm going to live in a hotel.
Because
before, in fact, I think that you might have actually come and visited me once when I was living at the Standard. Do you remember when I was living at the Standard?
I did one of the famous missing episodes of this podcast.
I believe that is absolutely
the
case.
At the Standard, yeah.
So that was, I reckon, in the period where I was living at the Standard. And I look back on that time in my life now. It was nearly 3 months and I loved it. I feel like I actually want to live in a hotel because it's just like there's a cafe downstairs. That's where I go for breakfast. I never have to wash up. They clean up your stuff. Like, someone makes your bed.
Shampoo appears.
It just appears. There's always stuff in the minibar if I need a snack. Like, it's just good living. So, and somebody said to me, they were like, well, but isn't that expensive? And I said, well, actually, compared to having a place of my own that I don't use, it's not.
Getting a hotel for 3 weeks rather than renting an apartment for half a year and using
and only
it for
going
three
for
weeks.
3 weeks. Yeah. The hotel works out heaps cheaper, it turns out.
All right. What are you going to be back doing? What's the...
I'm going back in January. Well, as long as my visa's clear because I'm in that, great process
of... Oh, God, I hate it every time.
Visa time now. And I'm sure it's all going to be fine.
Yeah. Every time I get the visa renewed or anything like that, or even now I've got global entry, so I rarely have to deal with a human when I'm entering the country, but I just go through these kiosks and it's a dream. But before I got that, every time even like you just go up to the person at the kiosk and you're like, there's absolutely no reason why I should have any problem whatsoever. I have a visa, I have also one of the sort of harder to get visas. So once you've got it, they're like, okay, you definitely have been scrutinized. It's in the passport, but you just think you're going to land at the wrong person's desk on the wrong day. And they're just having a miserable day, and they just decide to take it out on you and ask you a couple of questions, and you say something that they register as weird.
Well, that's what I'm like. So, my current visa ran out early in December, which was an awkward time for it to run out because
it's just all the holidays.
In fact, it might run out maybe even like today or tomorrow as we're, so they can't really, they've started the process of the new one, but you know, they couldn't kind of really get in the swing of that until the old one's kind of run its course. And then you hit the holidays. Anyway, yep. I was meant to be doing San Francisco Sketch Fest, early in January.
Oh yeah.
And, I actually messaged them the other day and just said, pull me out now, because I've been assured by everyone the visa will be done by then, but I'm just starting to get the feeling it's going to be like that extra week or that blah, blah, blah,
yeah, for I've an had appointment
or a thing or a whatever.
I had a renewal that fell over, I think it was Thanksgiving a couple of years ago, and the same deal, because it's just, I was in London, where you go, like, it's not a holiday at all. There's no reason. But the embassy obviously runs takes all the American holidays off.
Yeah.
So the embassy is just closed for 3 days over that period. And then it's the weekend. So you go like, oh, it should take a few days for the passport to come back. But then it just ticks over to that next day. And then it's another 6 days.
Yeah. So, hopefully I'll probably do some other shows in LA and a few other places kind of mid-Jan. And then through my radio job, we're going to the Super Bowl. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So like I'm not the world's hugest NFL fan, but I'm interested.
Well,
but
you obviously, like your sports though. You still...
I do like sports a lot.
And it's the spectacle and the whole thing.
I mean, it's the Super Bowl. Yeah. So I was like, yeah, of course I'm going to go. So I'm actually, like, I'm weirdly excited about it. I'm excited about going to the Super Bowl in the same way as someone who doesn't take drugs would be excited about going to Burning Man.
Right.
Like, you know, like, I feel like it'll be really good. I just don't feel like I'll be into it as much as some of the people who are really into it.
Yeah. But you'll probably feel better the next day.
Yeah, exactly. Make a few more sensible decisions. Yeah, exactly.
But no, I think it'll be great. And also, there's something really cool about going to an event like that with a press card as well.
Right.
Because you're going to be... I love going to something like that with a sense of purpose. You know, it's like on the way... I'm going to go back to London after Australia for Christmas and New Year's and see my family and all that kind of thing. But I'm stopping off in Malaysia and Singapore. And I could just have a holiday there for a couple of days, but I'm doing a couple of gigs. I'm doing a gig in Kuala Lumpur and a gig in Singapore. And someone said, well, why don't you just fucking take those days off? And you're like, oh, firstly, because I like gigging and I like the chance to gig. And I've gigged in Singapore, but never in Kuala Lumpur before. So that'll be cool. But also, when you're there with a purpose, it feels like, A, you've got this sort of sense of purpose and this mission. And also, then you have access to things because the people, like the local comics and the local comedy promoters will show you things. They'll take you around and they'll be like, oh, you've got to come with us to this thing. And it's great.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I use this analogy often and I'm sure people are completely bored of it. But, you know, we're card players. Yeah, we go town to town and like, if you're in a town, you're like, is there a game on tonight? Because you know that like it's not about necessarily winning the game. It's about going down to the game and playing the game and talking to the people around the table and getting the information. Like, you know,
that's
the thing about comics. You can kind of go to, you can be like, you know, in a new town, find a gig and kind of get a little key to the city.
Yeah, exactly. And they'll, you know, you'll go out to dinner with them afterwards or whatever, and we'll go out for a drink or, you know, ideally with the other comics, sometimes with audience members, but I prefer to not do that generally. Sometimes they're really cool and great, but other times you're like, oh, now
I'm in a foreign country and I don't know these people.
Well, also then there's also a feeling that you have to continue doing the show for another 3 hours.
Like, yes.
Oh, I just want to be a person now.
I often have people get mad at me because I don't do like photos or signings and stuff after the show. And I'm like, mostly it's because by the time my show is done, I am emotionally and physically exhausted.
Yeah.
So I just couldn't give you what you wanted. Like, you'd be disappointed with, you'd be more, I can live with the disappointment we both have that it didn't happen.
Yeah.
I can't live with the disappointment on your face when you realize what I'm really like.
How was what was it like going out on the piss with Will Anderson? Oh, he was mostly texting.
Yeah, it's terrible. He just was real tired. He was in the corner. I think three times he said, "When can I go home?"
Have we done it yet? Yeah, it really is. It's just someone's a comic, a more experienced comic. When I was a newer comic, said like, "Don't let audience members buy you drinks because then they own you for the time it takes to drink it."
I mean, that's a fair point.
Which is pretty much the case. I mean, I think that's why comics will often do, some of those people will do shots with the audience instead. They're like, I'll do a shot with you. Because then you go like, hey, knock it back. And then you're like, all right, lads.
I mean, that is actually a very good way. I'd never really thought about it like that. But of course that is why.
Yeah, rather than doing a pint.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Although in I was doing a show in Alaska a while back. And they have a little tour up at Fairbanks, Alaska.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. No, yeah. I've done Anchorage, and then I was meant to do that tour, and I had to cancel it for some reason. I think I pissed them off in the process, so I think I'm probably never going to get to do that run.
Well, I last time I was there, it was minus 36. Have I talked to you about this? Anyway, it was like so cold there, and I clearly did not pack enough clothes. At one stage, I tried to go down to the local shops, and I put on every bit of clothing that I'd packed to go there, and it still wasn't enough. Like, literally still wasn't enough. I stepped outside the door and was like, nope, gonna have to go back inside. So I was trapped in this hotel essentially for like a week where I couldn't leave. The hotel didn't have, like, it had, the restaurant was open a couple of hours a day, but it wasn't really like, you couldn't get food all the time. There was like a vending machine. Like it was, but they have like a legal weed store up there. So the guy had taken me there on the first day. So it was pretty much just like sitting around inside smoking weed for like four
Eating
days.
Kit Kats.
And then going back to the vending machine, it was like, it's a very glamorous life on the road.
All right, I'm going to do all of row A, then I'm going to do all of row B.
That would have been great, but the vending machine only took like change, so I also had to keep going down to the front desk to get like change. Anyway, it was a bit of a nightmare. But
The stoned Australian needs more quarters.
They let you smoke inside up there still. I think mostly because it's Alaska and they are very proud of the kind of lack of rules that they have about things.
Yep.
But secondly, because if you went outside to try to smoke, you would die. So I'm at this bar gig and it's their tradition that they like will send a shot to you on stage every 10 minutes during your set. Like you're doing like your minimum sort of 50 minute headline set, and every 10 minutes they will send a shot up to you.
I had that in Anchorage as well. Yeah. And, but I'm like, I will now tell them, look, don't do this because you've paid money to see a show. And I'm this size, and you will get 20 minutes of show tops before it just degenerates.
It's a good point. They should have a more proportionate shot glass for you.
I do.
Like, it's slightly down from the usual shot glass style. You're like, to be honest, this actually looks like quite like a normal cup in my hand. So.
Yeah. I do know of comics who will say to the bartender, send up, like, do two real shots and then send me, like, Sprite for the rest of it.
Yeah,
or water or whatever. Like,
well, I was in Alaska, so I had nothing better to do with my time, Matt. I've already told you what I was doing with my downtime, so I thought, yeah, sure, I'll drink the shots. Why not? Like,
you're also much better at performing with the level of alcohol in you than I am.
Also, to be honest, they don't get the diminished show quality. It just means I'll keep going. I'm like, well, I probably will talk for another 10 minutes if there's another shot coming my way.
Oh, God, I've got to... Gonna pay for my shots if I stop saying things.
Yeah, exactly.
If I say goodnight, I've got to pay for alcohol like an idiot. Except they probably would still just give me free alcohol at that bar.
Yeah, I think that they did. I remember. But I was always amazed by the adventurous lifestyle and the way that they live their life. In that, you know, there were people who had driven like 11 hours through the snow and stuff to come and see the show because, you know, they were that sort of keen to come and see the show. And I was just like, if it was like this, like, I mean, I've not been able to leave the hotel all week, but people are...
Yeah.
Still doing things.
Well, did you get that? Because there are places in Australia that are 11 hours from the nearest reasonable bit of entertainment, aren't there?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I grew up in one of them. But we were...
But like, you must have had times like that where you'll do a show somewhere in Australia and you have people go like, yeah, we've driven for
oh, yeah.
half a day to come and see you.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely that is the case. And, like, if you go to North Queensland, I mean, even just between from show to show, like, you know, you're talking about 10-hour.
Right.
Particularly back in the day when we were... Yeah, you didn't fly city to city.
Yeah, you didn't actually have Jetstar money.
Yeah, exactly. didn't have that sweet Rex regional air money.
Yeah. You didn't have $30 to throw away on an airline.
You know, we would do, particularly through Western Australia, yeah, big 10-hour, yeah, easily 10-hour drives. And you would have people coming from equally as far away to come to the shows.
Yeah, coming from Britain where... If I drove in for 10 hours in any direction from my house...
You would have Brexited.
Yeah, that's literally... I would be either in a different country or the sea. They're the only two options. I think I could just about drive for 10 hours straight into Scotland and still be in Scotland.
Well, if you drove
maybe Cornwall, maybe.
If you drove 10 hours from here upwards, you'd end up in Byron Bay. If you drove 10 hours from here downwards, you could end up in Melbourne.
Yep.
If you drove 10 hours, if you drove more than 3 minutes in that direction, you'd be in the ocean.
Yeah.
But if you drove the other way, west, for 10 hours, I imagine you would be, where would you be? You'd be just in the middle of nowhere. Like, you literally, you'd just be like, I mean, there'd be stuff there, but it's like, you'd still have to go a fair way further to get to something.
That's recognisable as a town.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, your country is so big.
It is big, isn't it?
And so empty.
Yeah, mostly. It's mostly desert and hot air. But luckily that, you know, it's not the perfect conditions for solar and wind power.
Yeah,
it's fine. Hey, we should look at finishing up because I've got my show and you've been trekking around.
I'm going to try and I'm going to come down to your show, but I'm going to see if I can get home first and drop my bags off.
Have you been? Are you staying with?
I'm staying with my sister's.
Your sister and newborn baby.
Yeah, although they're actually not going to be there for the next 2 days, so I'm going to see them next in London.
Oh. Okay, but you've previously been there already.
I've previously been there. I've hung out with the baby, got some good baby time in me.
Yeah, because you did mention early on you were here for the baby, and then you just told me that they were away and you were going to see them in London. Which,
if I were off and did some gigs and I'm meeting them in London, I wanted some extra baby time. Because actually, they're currently in Manchester, but I'll see them again when they come back down to London.
Okay, now so they've just taken a baby to the United Kingdom on a plane.
Just taken a baby on a plane.
How? Yeah. How?
Apparently, it was all right.
Yeah?
Apparently, because also she's not even 10 weeks old.
Right.
And I think when they're that age, it's weirdly easier.
Yeah.
It's never easy
traveling with a baby.
Because they're
just kind of a lump, a flesh lump.
Yeah, she's tiny and she stays exactly where you put her.
Yeah.
She can't move yet.
She's a swaddled lump.
That's exactly it. So
you just, when she cries or smells, you have to deal with that. But otherwise, she just...
Yeah, so apparently on the... First leg, she was golden, and the second leg, she cried at the beginning and the very end, but she was fine for the rest of it. So it was relatively easy as far as things go with it. I don't know.
That's not bad.
Not too bad. Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to go up there, and then I'm going to come down and see you doing your improvising.
Mm-hmm. And then hopefully get on the show. Hopefully get on the second show tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to see if I can squeeze my way on. I've played that room before. They know me. My poster's on the wall, or it used to be anyway. I don't know if it still is.
Unless
they had a refurb.
Well, you know what you firstly need to do is go and stand by your poster.
Go stand by my... Remember this? Remember when I signed that and put it on the wall?
Well, maybe that's where you should have the conversation with the person who's like booking the room.
Yeah.
You should say, there's a guy out here who needs to have a word with you. And then they and discover you standing next to your poster.
Right in the middle of the stairs. I think it's halfway up the stairs. Just like, he needs to, he's standing in the middle of the stairs.
Could you come down here? Yeah. No, a little bit further.
Just a little. Now turn your head to the right.
Yep.
More right.
No,
left a bit.
Yep.
Up a tiny bit. Down.
Yep.
There.
Yep. All right.
Now.
Will not be the shortest person who's been on the lineup, though, this week. I will say that because...
Oh, is Brad in town?
Brad Williams was dropped in last night, I believe. So
good old Brad.
I did not get to see him. I was hoping that I might get to see him, but I saw him penciled on the lineup. So.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. Well... we should finish up, but what can we plug? What can we tell people about?
I tell you what we can plug,
yes,
because We are putting the... Andy, my Probably Science co-host, and I are putting the finishing touches together to hopefully coming back out here in February. And Andy's going to come out with me, and we're going to do some live Probably Science shows.
So, like, do a national tour?
Yeah, that's the plan. I mean, like, restricted national. Yeah. Like, okay, I think we're gonna hit... The plan is to do... We haven't worked out anything.
How long would he be here for, do you think?
We think probably like 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, that's enough.
I think, because we've both got early February completely free. We're doing Sketchfest in San Francisco, but then we don't have anything until the end of Feb. So we're going to... The plan is to come out here in February, do... So there's someone, one of our listeners, who is a scientist who's based up in Cairns, who's actually trying to hook up something there, because there's apparently like money for science communication.
Yeah.
And... You know, with the university and that kind of thing. So we're going to go up to Cairns, do something there, then hopefully Brisbane, then come down, do Sydney and Melbourne, and then
well, all maybe I would Adelaide. Say too is, like, there might be, and maybe it's not, you know, what you want to do this time, but if you're talking that time of the year, that's around sort of, you know, O week for university in Australia. You're going to be like in the sort of like vibe of when, you know, people are going to university.
Yep.
So there might be actually more than one sort of science department or blah, 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 where you could pick up even side gigs. Like even if they aren't the, even if you wanted to say be in Sydney, do a, you know, a show of it at the store, but also do one at the Manning Bar at Sydney Uni for, you know, the science students in O Week or something like that. That might be a really cool way to...
I didn't know that's a thing. And also I didn't know that you call it O Week.
Oh, orientation week.
Oh, I guessed opening, but either way, it sounds very different.
Yeah. Well, what would they call orientation in when you
in
go
England,
to
England? It's Freshers Week.
Freshers Week. Yeah. Okay.
And I think in America it's like freshman orientation. No, hang on, they've got another word for it. Americans, what is it? Ah, God, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, we call that O Week.
All right.
O Week. You know, it's Australia. We just like, you know, we like to put O in like at the end of things normally. Well, this is just O Week. Orientation's too long for us. It's
you
like
know,
O-week.
Shorten it to like O-O.
O Week. You know, you go to schoolies when you finish school, and then you go to O Week at the end of...
At the uni.
At the uni. Exactly. O Week at uni.
Yeah, we're gonna be out. That's a good idea. Well. So yeah, we haven't finalized the details yet, but...
If there are any, and there may not be, but a lot of teachers listen to my other podcast, Philosophy, and so some of them might have found their way over here. If there are any, say, people who have university connections or, you know, are listening to this and think, oh, that is actually something that might be really awesome for, you know, like us to integrate into what we're doing, where can they contact you guys?
ProbablyScience@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at ProbablyScience. And also email's probably best, probablyscience@gmail.com. And also if you know scientists in Australia, in any of these cities, I think we're going to try to get over to Perth, probably going to try and do Adelaide because it's going to be during Adelaide Fringe. Maybe we'll fit in a show then. But if you know of cool, interesting science people in each of those cities as well, because we're going to try and do like at least one scientist and a comedian. I was hoping to steal you, but you might be actually in America during that time, Super Bowling.
No, I'm back in February, so maybe hopefully we'll be in the same place at the same time at something.
You're going to get an email.
Yeah, great. Well, I think we're like there. I think, you know, essentially we're back first week of Feb or something like that.
Oh, nice.
So let us know. And also, I'll give you some details of a few people that I think might be good.
That would be
local
awesome.
People who fit into that category.
Mate, that would be great. Yeah. And then other plugs, just I'm Matt Kirshen on all the social media. I think there's an underscore on my Instagram, but I'm bad at Instagram anyway. So at Matt Kirshen on Twitter, it'll just Google anything close to the name and you'll find it.
Matt, thank you very much.
Mate, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You've got to get going. I've got to get showering and ready. But I will see you again in an hour or so.
Yeah.
And I will talk to the audience again soon. My new show is on sale, Melbourne Comedy Festival and Hobart at the moment. More dates to come, comedy.com.au.